Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. My name is Daniel Lim, and I'm here with Ed Stetzer.
And I am super glad to be here with Daniel M.
All right, so we're going to go straight into the question, and here it is. Ed, we are in the middle of a massive worldwide pandemic, COVID-19, and I think what this has brought to mind, I know a lot of people are likening it to the Spanish flu, but with everything else that's going on, I think it's probably in our lifetime that there's going to be another pandemic. Obviously, no one has a crystal ball or anything like that, but it is likely. So what can we learn from now to prepare us for the next pandemic?
Yeah, and I think in general, you know, there's going to be a crisis. And how do we lead in the midst of a crisis, I think, is a key that a lot of people hadn't thought about. And here we found ourselves in the midst of this global pandemic. So, but the crisis could be local as well. It could be, I mean, think about the hurricanes that hit the southeastern United States. Mm-hmm. Think about earthquakes that I was just at the very bottom. I went to the Salton Sea, to Bombay Beach, which is the very bottom of the San Andreas Fault. I was 263 feet below sea level just like a week ago. Mm. And, you know, that fault's going to go sometimes. And so how do we lead in the midst of a crisis with limited resources, an uncertain future, many churches not gathering, particularly larger churches? 60% of churches are gathering, but they're disproportionately in more rural areas today. So how then do we prepare for the next pandemic or crisis, whatever it may be? So in the sense, we're still working through this one, right? I wrote about four phases of the crisis early on in the coronavirus pandemic. One was pause and pivot. The other was prepare and plan. Number three was engage fully the crisis. Number four was basically reemerge and reengage. And so we're still in that engaging the crisis, depending on where you are. Mm. Some churches are slowly reemerging and trying to figure out what a new normal looks like. But here's a couple of things we know in a time of crisis. Even the Wheaton College Billy Graham Center that I live, that I lead,
right?
Exactly. We have really had to, I mean, think about the language. We gather global leaders for greater gospel impact. I mean, you're in my building at least once, sometimes twice a year, mm-hmm. Daniel, because we gather these church planning leaders or whoever. And I gather groups like this twice a month.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I can't gather anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't, global leaders, I can't get anybody. Well, I can't get anyone from the rest of the world to come to the United States. They basically have convinced that we're like literally kissing each other to pass the coronavirus because of our level of irresponsibility. The rest of the world is not impressed with America right now. Just look at where your passports will get you.
Yeah.
Nowhere. I can't even go to Canada.
Yeah.
and so what happens is, in the midst of that, we're still working through how we best address things. We're still taking it little by little. And what we learned is we get very divided during that. So here's what we found. The Wheaton College Billy Graham Center, we believe that in a crisis, our mission, our vision, and our values remain unchanged, mm-hmm. right? So we still have a mission. We're going to gather people. We're going to help improve mission, God's work around the world, evangelism. Our mission, vision, values remain unchanged. What has changed is our strategy and our structure. And my guess is that's what you're experiencing in Edmonton. Yeah. So our structure, the question we're asking is, you know, how do you frame your organization, church, or ministry for the flourishing and the enacting of the vision that seeks to accomplish the mission? Well, that structure shifted, and our strategy, what tools are you implementing to help make your organization more effective and efficient? So we, for example, now the Wheaton College Billy Graham Center is a first to digital organization. We've never done that before, but you know, you participated in our Send Institutes thing where 25,000 people engaged in our post-pandemic missiology questions. And so I think for us, the issue is, how does your church, and I think people need to be prepared for this. Most people aren't prepared for crises, but most of us will face a crisis in our lifetime. And so we did a whole course on this, crisis leadership from a Christian perspective, at the Wheaton College Billy Graham Center. People are interested, they go to wheatonx.wheaton.edu. It's available there. It's really cheap. It's available just to help people. But here's the thing. One of the key things is have a clear mission, vision, and values, change your strategy and your structure. And the end result is you can flourish during the most difficult times.
Yeah. And that's the piece where honestly, the value, the mission, vision, values piece, you're right. It shouldn't change in the midst of a pandemic. If it is, then likely the mission and vision weren't infinite in that sense. I love the book from Simon Sinek, or his thinking in and around, or the popularization of that thinking in and around that concept of you know, we often lead via finite goals and finite visions and missions, and but what does it look like for us to, especially as a church, lead in an infinite manner? Because yeah, I mean, that's a lot of what our vision and mission is. But having said all that, the values piece really does need to dictate what that structure and strategies look like. But too often, the values that we have in our organizations are they're kind of statement of faith things, right? That don't actually dictate how we make decisions,
right? Yeah, so I think having those things are key. And then you also need to consider that there are certain phases in a crisis. And in a book called You're It, it was created by the National Preparedness Institute at Harvard. They talk about this in terms of very easily memorable things. There's the basement, the workroom, the laboratory. So let me give you an example. Early on in this crisis and in the next crisis, you will find yourself, you have to go to the basement. You have to. And people do this personally. They start hoarding things. They do whatever they need to do to survive. And when you're sitting in, when a hurricane's coming up the Gulf Coast, you're not thinking, well, what could we do to make this awesome? No, you're like, we got to get in the basement. Mm. And so that's where all of us go. That's where churches went. Matter of fact, I did that, you know, that crazy Facebook Live from my basement that almost 200,000 people have watched.
Yeah, I remember that.
Because I did it from my basement, but partly because people were going to the basement. So churches all across the world were saying, we're in a crisis. We got to figure out how to get online. And I'm saying, no, you can't stay in the basement. This is not the crisis. The crisis is coming and you got to get in the workroom. I didn't use that language, but the workroom is a place where we're kind of getting into the new rhythm. Everyone reset, you know, reconfigured. Remember, their strategy and their structure changed to make it work, and they got out of the basement. The panic of March and April led to the workroom of June. But here's the thing. The best thinkers, the best leaders through crisis, they're actually getting up into the laboratory. It might be in the attic. And so what we did at the Wheaton College Billy Graham Center is, we moved to we moved Amplify up and online and created open sessions in the evening with Christine Kane and Lee Strobel. And we had thousands of people engaged. We said, let's try this a new way. That's going to be our new model going forward at Amplify, is our evening sessions. Churches all over the world had watch parties. We're going to do that when we gather Amplify again in next October, not the coming October, but the October after. We're going to do that again because the laboratory, we learned something works better. When we did our missiologist council that Send Institute did, 25,000 people engaged over 5 days. The resources, videos used there have been used tens of thousands of time in churches. And even the course that I mentioned, we created a crisis leadership course. You know why? Because we sat in a room and we said, what do we need to do here? This is what you do when you're in the laboratory. What do we need to do in the midst of the crisis that will make us better in or after the crisis? You can't think of that in the basement. You're in trouble in the basement. You're just trying to survive. In the workroom, you're trying to reorganize and re-centralize your processes and your systems. But in the laboratory, you're asking, what can we do best and better that will have that kind of long-term difference? So I think for people, being a crisis leader is not something that we're going to do a lot. But when it comes, here's one of the things that I think is fascinating. You will be the leader in a crisis in a way that you've never had before, and it will impact your leadership for years to come. And in other words, I mean, you've seen this already. When somebody loses, as a pastor, someone loses a family member, and you're there and you minister to them in their crisis, you're their pastor forever.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, in the midst of this pandemic, people are evaluating your leadership. And again, it's not an easy time, because what happens in a crisis is everybody has a strong opinion. Remember? And so you got, you know, a quarter of your church mad at you that you're not meeting if you're not, or a quarter of you mad at you if they are, and because everyone's getting their news from somewhere else. And so your leadership now will actually determine how people follow you as a leader later. And I think that's really key, a key understanding of how all this crisis leadership works.
I love that. I love the basement, workroom, and laboratory. So Ed, I guess the question on that, do you think leaders are more inclined to one of these phases than the others?
Yes, for sure. And I think, well, I don't think it's, I think leaders, people in general are inclined to go to the basement. Some people who think systemically long-term vision, they'll want to get out of the, go to the workroom quickly and to the laboratory. I think for all of us, the language we use in the crisis leadership course is we need to arch right at the beginning of a crisis. There, let me say this, there are two kinds of crises. There are incident crises and issue crises. An incident crisis is something that happens suddenly, right? A tornado hits, you're on the front page of the newspaper for something bad, you know, someone did something in your church. So you want to, the first phrase we talk about is arch. You want to acknowledge and respond concisely with haste. You want to quickly communicate to people, you know, people on your staff, in your church, constituents, whoever it may be, that you see something has happened. You're gathering the facts. This is what you know. You're going to find out more. So I think that for people who are more naturally hesitant to lead, this is what they need to know. They need to know you gotta arch, you gotta acknowledge, respond concisely with haste, and then gather all the information, right? And so that's what phase two we call is gap. That's gather, assess, and project. Gather the facts, assess the damage, project the challenges, right? So that's very quickly, and that's when you're starting to get out of the basement, get the information, and then from there, you start taking those next steps. I won't go into all of that, but we talk about pause, evaluating, pivoting, and proceeding. What I would say is, you should have, one of the things we learned from this crisis is that most of us were not ready. Now, again, you know, it's, I mean, I know this is a little weird and you'll mock me, but, you know, I came home in January from teaching a class in Hawaii. I know, suffering for Jesus. While I was there in Hawaii, I actually read a story about the Wuhan virus, it was called at the time. And I, having read that story, I was convinced that this was going to be the greatest global crisis of our lifetime. So I actually started to lose weight. As you know, I'm a big guy and I'm down 60 pounds. I started to prepare. I told my team, they're going to shut down everything. They're going to shut down the schools. They're going to shut down the churches. No, you know, everyone kind of rolled their eyes at me at first. And the only, so now I know you're thinking how, wow, you're, Ed, you're just amazing. The only reason I thought that was I had actually watched a movie. And in that movie, the this it all happened. And so, and for some reason, this movie just stuck with me.
Was it Contagion?
Contagion, by the way. Yeah. Contagion. Exactly. And so don't think, you know, I went, so I thought Contagion, this, if what I read early on was asymptomatic spread, and that was the whole theme in Contagion.
Yeah, it was crazy.
And so people say, well, were you more prepared? No. I mean, I think for all of us, my wife said to me, if you were so prepared, you know, and she can mock me a little bit. And she said, if you're so prepared, how come you didn't like take our money out of the stock market before the crash? I'm like, well, okay. I didn't think about all that, but I did have toilet paper when everyone else didn't. But the point being is that this sort of took all of us by surprise. And you might have an hour's notice in a fire. And so immediately taking the right action. And here's the thing too. One of the great principles, I need to quit talking, but I'm passionate about this, is one of the big principles is that you got to tell people that you're going to be changing and over communicating because the stuff you say at first, let me give an example. At Wheaton College, spring break, we said we need, this was spring 2019. We are at spring break. We said, guys, we need a little more time to prepare the campus while you're on spring break. We moved spring break back a week. We'd never been done before. You know, the Wheaton College in all of its years has closed for a snow day two times in anyone's collective memory, 50 years. And so all of a sudden we're on spring break. We're about Thursday of spring break. And people said, hey, the administration said, we're gonna extend spring break another week so we can be ready to bring you back. Well, of course, then that was inconvenient for a lot of people. Flights had to be changed. But then we realized we can't pull this off. So we actually pulled the ripcord and we said, we're moving remote. Now, of course, boy, it blew up when we said people were mad, people were unhappy because some of our faculty, I mean, Wheaton College is this elite liberal arts college where people, you know, wear, you know, the tweed collar, or tweed vest. I don't know what you call it. I don't know, yeah, you know, yeah. The patches on their sleeves. And so this is a whole shift. And the Facebook page blew up. People were mad, but then everyone else began to do the same thing. But what we decided to do in spring break, we didn't do a week later. And these things change. And so consistently communicating that what you said on the basis of the facts you had at this time was the right decision, and now you've changed that. So I think crisis leadership is something that all of us need to be ready for. There are some wise steps that we can take so that when that next crisis comes, and it will come, I mentioned there are two crises, an incident crisis and an issue crisis. You're going to be one day just doing your ministry and somebody's going to listen to a sermon where you talked about something that's now out of step with culture, and they're going to kick you out of the public school that you're renting, and you're going to be on the front page of the paper. They're going to call you bad names. And that is a very sudden, that's a crisis that has come before you.
Yeah.
How are you going to be ready? You got to communicate with your people. You got to communicate with your leadership. You got to communicate with the secular media. These are all things that we want to think through, yeah, not be caught flat-footed, as I think many of us were during this pandemic.
Okay, so last question then. You said the phases were basement, workroom, laboratory. When do you think we're going to get out? Or what's after the laboratory? Is there another room, or is there another normal that we do get back to?
Yeah, I mean, eventually there is. It's a question, is at some point you have to see what that normal is. The problem is it might be a new normal.
Yeah.
So, and you know, we're in the midst of the coronavirus when we're receiving this. So here's the big shift for us. I mean, think about this for just a moment. You are not going to go back to big church outreach services in 2020 and maybe into 2021. Mm-hmm. So let's say we get a vaccine by January and we're developing some herd immunity, and now it's like almost safe to go back into public. Think about the idea of inviting 500 people crowded into a room for a big Christmas Eve service. Yeah. Ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
Easter, even if we have vaccine, people right now are reflexively nervous about crowds. It really depending on where you are. You know, it's shocking to me. I go to places around the country and everyone's just hanging out. But where you are, where I am, we're not doing that. And so what's the new normal going to be? That's the laboratory's helping you with that. So here's right now where a lot of people are asking about the laboratory is, online is probably going to be a far higher feature of your church and your life for a very long time.
Yeah.
And so what is it that you're going to do to make that work? So for example, I would be asking the question right now, you know, how do you preach to an online audience while having an audience there as well? And part of the things that everyone has not liked to do is preach to cameras. You know, when I was at Christ Fellowship in Miami, I would always preach to the three cameras, which, because we had more people outside of the room than inside the room. Mm-hmm. And people would say, it felt like you were talking to us. We didn't feel like you were talking to somebody else and overlooking us. And so what does that mean? You know, do I need three cameras where people can see me looking around, but I'm actually looking at the cameras because there are 10 times more people watching online than there are watching in person? Mm-hmm. So what are the things that we're going to do to heighten the experience of people who are worshiping with us remotely? I think those are questions we're going to just be asking for sure.
Love it. Love it. Well, thank you so much for listening in to the New Churches Q&A podcast. Perhaps there's someone that's come to mind as you listened, and the best thing to do would be, and we'd be grateful for this, if you just hit the share button, send them this episode. And yeah, thanks again for listening in. We'll catch you next time.